Calcio Land Podcast with David Amoyal.
Benvenuti, as we would say in Italy. Welcome to all of you that don't speak Italian. Thank you so much for joining us for the Friday episode of the Calcio Land podcast. So I got to be honest, I didn't even include Italy in the rundown when I prepared the show. I assumed we were going to face the winner, Portugal-Turkey. We aren't. So we are going to talk about that at the top with Alex. We won't go too much into that. We'll talk more about it next week. The bulk of the show, though, is dedicated to Dybala today. So Alex and I will talk about Juve and Dybala's decision to part ways at the end of the season. We have two superb guests, both based in Milano. The first one is going to be on Dybala, our friend Riccardo Spada, who we had on for Juve when they got Vlahovic. Really, really excellent guest. We had a great chat on Dybala. I think we were very fair to him. I also asked Riccardo if Dybala was a fancy luxury watch, what model would he be? I think you'll enjoy that answer. We wanted to definitely every episode until the end of the season, we will talk a little bit about at least one of the Scudetto contenders. So today we're going to do Milan. And we have our dear friend Alessandro Iagobone. Been a little while, so he's on to talk about Milan. And then with the Oscars coming up, I'm going to have some final thoughts on the show coming on this weekend. But before we get to all that, we do have to talk about Italy. I'm joined by our dear friend, producer, co-host of the show, Alex Goldberg, who's very, very busy with all the chatter on the Chelsea sale. But Alex, I know, I would imagine you were pretty shocked yesterday. There are a couple of Chelsea players that have been part of this Italy team. So let me ask you, how surprised are you? What's your main reaction to the news that Italy is not going to the World Cup for the second time in a row?
Yeah, well, I'm glad you include that part for the second time in a row. And then if you want to take a step back and just say that the team who won the Euros, this most recent Euros, didn't go to the World Cup before and isn't going to the World Cup after, that is unfathomable. That is insane. Like, if you just told me, and I was, say, getting new to this sport, and you were kind of explaining all the major tournaments, and I said, well, who won this Euros? And you said Italy. And then I would say, all right, how did they do in the previous World Cup? Oh, they weren't in it. Okay, fine. How did they do in the World Cup after they won the Euros? Oh, they weren't in it. I'd be like, what? Does that make any sense? How do you win the Euros and then not be in either bookending of World Cups? So that's the biggest surprise, is when you just completely take a step back and you look at all the context. But yeah, to not make the World Cup two times in a row. And who tweeted? I think it was Rory Smith, I want to say, that, of course, Italy were last in a knockout game in the World Cup in 2006, David, of course. So it'll be at least 20 years between Italy being in knockout games. In knockout games. That's, of course, assuming they make then the next World Cup and they get to knockout games. But think about that. It'll be 20 years between Italy being in knockout games in the World Cup. That is mad. That is wild. So, yeah, specifically on the game, listen, I watched the whole thing. I kind of actually, even though Portugal, Turkey on paper is the better game, I kind of have more ties to the Italian team, of course, the Azzurri, just because of Jorginho, and we have Emerson and this podcast. So, yeah, I was totally glued to the game. And David, at the end, the goal was ridiculous, of course. I mean, absolutely ridiculous. What a goal, by the way. And I know Donnarumma is going to be questioned for his positioning on it. And listen, David, I'm not here to beat Donnarumma down, because I think enough Azzurri fans are doing that. I think enough people in the world are doing that. Obviously, it's a great strike, but if you're Donnarumma, can you have a better angle? Can you still save that? Yeah, probably. And I'll just quickly say, this is another reminder as to why Edouard Mendy is still a better goalkeeper than Donnarumma, but I digress. Anyway, I'm not surprised how the game went, meaning Italy dominate, they control things. Well, how many chances did they have? I mean, they had 32 shots to North Macedonia's 4. So that's still extreme, but I'm not surprised by that outline, if you will. But I'm also not surprised that Italy couldn't find a way to score. Because, David, ever since this Euros tournament, where they really were sharp, and I know the last couple games, right, of the Euros, they ran out a little bit of gas with the true potency in attack. Like, they weren't as dominating. Against Spain, they weren't as dominating. I want to say against Belgium, I think my mind's kind of leaving me now. But yeah, I guess against Spain, Belgium, and England, they lost a little bit of that oomph that they had for most of the Euros. But then once the Euros were over, it was just stale. It was really, really stale. And I know on paper, Ciro Immobile is this really potent scorer in Serie A. I know that. And I know Lorenzo Insigne's legacy in Serie A. And I know that Berardi has got 14 goals and 11 assists in Serie A for Sassuolo. But I don't know, man. It's still not good enough, the trio, in my opinion. And not enough things, I think, are tried when that isn't going well. Also, you got to remember, and this is not being a prisoner of the moment or being reactionary, but Ciro Immobile is one of these guys that is really good in Serie A, but is so unproven anywhere else, if you know what I mean. Like, he's unproven in other leagues, and he obviously is not this world beater when he's playing for Italy. I think that's true. I mean, almost wasn't every Azzurri fan saying that the Azzurri were doing well at the Euros, but Immobile wasn't,
yeah.
You know, it really had nothing
Fair.
To do with Immobile. So that's really never worked. And you look at the other countries that have really good attacks that are like top dogs, their strikers are scoring. They are. Or they're playing like a pivotal important role. And Berardi, like I said, I just read you a stat line at Sassuolo. And I know he had his moments at the Euros, but still, this isn't this world beater consistently. He's not one of these guys that's so proven that when Italy need him, he can just say, all right, I'll put you on my back. You know, I saw him in this game yesterday. He's just popping shots, you know, and fine, they could go in, but also they're so predictable. We know he's just going to cut in and shoot it on his left. And then Lorenzo Insigne, David, how many times have we written the guy off and said his career was done? And then, yeah, to his credit, because he's a fighter, right? He's a really small, little, gritty guy. Good for him. But the fact that we've had to write him off so many times still should be telling that he also can't do the bulk of it. He's 30 years old. He's about 4 feet tall. And obviously, I say that out of love. You know, I like the players, so I know he's not that short. But it's a lot to put on him. And then this is my thing with the Chelsea comparison. Okay, so the midfield is Barella, Jorginho, and Verratti, right? Class. Class. But who's going to get you a consistent goal? Who's going to consistently help you then if you can't score? Verratti's a wonderful player, and he was phenomenal again against North Macedonia. And I know every once in a while he can be part of the buildup, but that's not his main role. And I know Barella, yep, like he definitely can be part of it. He can be, but it's still not one of his primary responsibilities. And Jorginho just simply doesn't score from open play. He won't ever do that. And yeah, actually, it's funny. For Chelsea lately, he had two great assists recently amidst really some bad performances. But Jorginho also, for the most part, does not help the attack. You know, he just keeps things ticking. So that's not enough. That's not enough oomph. So you can have 50 shots if you want, but there's not enough killer instinct in this Azzurri team. And David, I'll just use the word again, stale, stale. And the last thing I'll say is that belief they had at the Euros, you could feel the belief within the team. Right when the Euros were over, it was sucked right out. Like, sucked right out. And I don't know who that falls on. I don't know if that falls on Mancini. I don't know if that falls on some of the leaders in the team. But between not having enough proven oomph, like potency in attack, and also just having that spirit taken out of the team, yeah, I guess it's actually not that surprising. But like I said originally at the beginning of this answer, when you really take a step back and you know that Italy have missed two World Cups in a row right now, and in the middle they won the Euros, it's baffling, it's wild, it's weird, it's really every bizarre adjective you can slap onto it. So David, yeah, that's my take on all of it. But, of course, you're even closer to the situation. What's your take?
Great job, Alex. And we didn't prep this part at all, but you set me up. I guess we telepathically knew kind of where we're going to. So very well done. I love what you said, this idea of someone new to the sport, Italy winning Euro, and in the fashion that they did, being universally praised by everyone as the best team, especially in the first part of the tournament, how they were playing and how quickly it changed. And this, to me, is why so often in the media, on social media, reaction is how we just play the result. It's like we go on the result and the takes are based on that. So I've seen a lot of, you know, all big criticisms of the big problems of Italian football. You know, the fact that all the top clubs, Immobile is the only Italian on one of the top teams, an Italian striker. I definitely think there's a lot to that. The league as a whole and how they'd rather invest in a a foreign player from abroad who's cheaper than an Italian player. We've talked at length about, you know, the inflated prices sometimes of an Italian player. I get all that, and the federation being badly run, the product not being marketed correctly, and this idea, oh, look, Serie A has been a great league, it hasn't been marketed, and the chickens came home to roost with this elimination. Now, all those things were also true last summer when Italy won the Euro. So to me, I really look at it on the beauty of the game, like the breaks of the game, how much they can change things. Look, I think that it'd make a big difference that Spinazzola and Chiesa weren't playing yesterday. Absolutely. I think that makes a huge difference. We talk about the Batman thing, you know, you're a hero long enough, eventually you turn into a villain. Think of like the last Euro. I would have bet my, if you told me one player you bet your life on a penalty, I think almost anyone would have taken Jorginho after the Euro. And he even said it after the game yesterday. He knows those missed penalties in the qualifier were huge. You mentioned Donnarumma. After the Euro, Donnarumma was like a Marvel superhero. I would have felt like incredibly confident with Donnarumma in goal. At any point, he's had problems at PSG. Yesterday, I'm with you. Yeah, okay. Was it a great shot? Absolutely. Do we think the Donnarumma that we saw at the Euro, do people think he would have saved it? Probably. So we very often play the results. It's the breaks of the game. It's obviously highlighted more because it's 4 years, you know, they didn't qualify the last time as well. So I'll tell you the other thing, and I totally get it. I think in the moment when we react to things, that's the worst we are. We don't have, you know, we're just like reacting. We're not really responding to the situation. So I've seen a lot of takes that this is the worst moment for Italian football, that this is even worse than being eliminated by Sweden because it's a home against Macedonia. I'm going to push back strongly against that. To me, losing to Sweden in the context that it happened was far worse. That team had not was not coming off winning the Euro, so there wasn't much faith in the team. I remember saying, okay, yeah, Ventura's a perfect villain, did a terrible job, but let's not ignore the fact that this is the least talented Italy team 4 years ago that I can remember. And there is clearly much more talent now. Like even, you know, before the game, people were like, oh, Zaniolo, Scamacca scratched. We mentioned, you know, Jorginho and Donnarumma, you know, turning into villains. I think a lot of people are realizing how important Bonucci is. This is true also for Juve. A lot of people are, you know, doing the parallel Villarreal-Macedonia. I think it's a great parallel. You know who was missing in both games? Bonucci. So there's also that. So I totally push back on this idea that this is worse because there's a lot more talent. Even Bastoni, not great yesterday, but, you know, you're like, okay, this is a guy we can build on. You talked about the midfield. There's still a lot more talent. So I think in the moment, we're playing a lot the result, and I think there's a little bit prisoner of the moment on this being worse than 4 years ago. So yeah, it's a bummer. It absolutely sucks. I always say it, you know, for me, the biggest loss is for young children. You know, I remember watching the World Cup when I was 9 years old. Back then, there wasn't as many things as there are now. So it was the biggest deal. I totally fell in love in the sport. So I feel really bad for like kids in Italy or kids of, you know, Italian descent who aren't going to follow Italy in the World Cup. At least they had the Euro. But that part's rough. And I think, Alex, what you said, it's incredible. They haven't been in one group knockout stage since 2006. I at least was an adult for that part. There's a lot of people listening to this podcast who maybe just have vague memories. So I feel a little bit more for them for sure.
Yeah, absolutely. So, David, I know that when a team does not do well, even if the manager has nothing to do with it, it will question the manager, but I'm sure there probably are some fair criticisms of Roberto Mancini. So what, in your opinion, because this is always the next conversation, right? Not just for country. This is the same conversation for club. You know, you really fail in a disappointing fashion in a tournament or just in a season. And the next thing from journalists and fans is, what's the future of this manager? Who's coming next if this manager's out? So what's your opinion on Mancini's future, the Azzurri's future with a manager, etc.?
Yeah, so I asked this question on Twitter yesterday, and I wasn't being facetious. I didn't specify when. I was just curious, like, the next manager. Now, I do think there's a decent chance Mancini is going to leave. Like, it could be by virtual decision. I don't think the Federation would fire him, but I could think he could also say, you know what? I won the Euro. This is a really bad look. The objective isn't so much to build for the next Euro, which we won. It's really to make sure we qualify for the next World Cup. So, look, only two managers have won. Italian managers have won the World Cup since 1982. You know, Italy's had a great national team, I would say. And somebody tweeted this at me, Calcio Champagne, who has some very good points. And he says, you could make a case for a long time Italy over the scope, late 90s, early 2000s, overall had the best national team. And they don't have too much to show for it. So Mancini does have a title. So I could see that parting ways. And maybe Mancini still has a lot of luster from the Euro that he can get a big job. So I think our, you know, Alex, sometimes we've done this podcast many, many times. I always say that the take I regret the most not having that someone on the pod had was our friend Anthony Locascio, who said Premier League's Marvel movies, said he asked Tarantino, P.T. Anderson to this day. I'm incredibly jealous that I didn't come up with that. It was there hanging. And it was also the future Azzurri coach. I predicted that it was going to be a player that was on the 206 team, and I was thinking Pirlo Gattuso, but the very obvious answer was Cannavaro, and I think that's who's going to be the next manager. I'm not saying it's a good decision. I'm saying that's who I think it's going to be. He's very close to the Federation. He's a young manager. They can say that they're building a new cycle. They could say, oh, we're going to build with youth. We're going to have a young manager. There's been reports that it could be Cannavaro with Lippi kind of overseeing the project. Lippi and Cannavaro not only tied to the 2006 World Cup, they managed together in China. Italy's very parochial. Anyone who's suggesting a foreign manager, Bielsa, which might be a joke, but any other foreign manager, I can tell you right now, I'd be beyond shocked if that happens. The Italian Federation always hires an Italian manager. I make fun of them for being parochial, but maybe in this case, that's not the worst thing in the world. But maybe, you know, going with Cannavaro / Lippi already, Lippi's second return was a disaster. I'm not saying this is a great choice, but gun to the head, I think that's what's going to happen. Okay, so let's switch gears. Let's talk about Dybala, Alex. So on Monday, the report came out, and then Juve executive director Arrivabene confirmed that Juve would not be extending Dybala's contract. So I want to ask you this, because right after this was announced, I saw a bunch of Man United, even Chelsea, saying, oh, great, now we can get Dybala. Do you think, and you've obviously been covering this podcast, you've watched, you've heard us talk about Dybala a ton. Do you think for someone who's not following Serie A closely, Dybala is probably a little bit overrated compared to his actual impact that he can do right now?
Probably still. Probably to a certain extent. I also don't know what he's like in FIFA these days, so I know it sounds silly, but if he's still rated well or really...
Well, that's a big factor, and he is rated well there.
So I want to say that probably, as I like to say, the hipsters, David, right? The people who want to seem extra nuanced on the game that are of the younger demographic, I'm sure they still really are seduced by what Dybala can do and aren't actually paying attention to Serie A on a week-to-week basis. So, yeah, I think he probably is still a little bit overrated because, you know what, I have kind of seen similar, David, when people say, oh, wow, you could get Dybala on a free. People are like, oh, my God, Dybala on a free? What a steal. But it's not so simple, right? Yeah, if you have the exact right system for him, sure, that could be a steal because he definitely has the talent of someone you wouldn't normally get on a free. But as you've pointed out, David, and as many have pointed out, you're going to see a lot of players that are really talented on frees this summer and moving forward. So I'm not sure if that's even all that surprising than it would have been a handful of years ago getting the player of Dybala on a free. So I do think based on some of the reactions I've seen, like, oh, Dybala on a free? Yeah, let's do it. It kind of shows he is a little bit overrated because, David, is there not an attacker in the world that is more system specific than Paulo Dybala?
Say he's the hardest to fit tactically. That's how I would put it. I think you said it very well up top that he's not the easiest player to fit. So yeah, without a doubt, I think you kind of have to gear your team towards fitting him into your system.
Yeah, absolutely. So David, what would have been the best reason for Juve to actually extend his contract? They're obviously not, but what would have been a good reason for them to actually do that?
Yeah, so I've been working on this column. I'm going to post it today all week. You know, one thing that I really like to challenge myself on is if I have an opinion on something, is to always ask myself, well, if I disagreed with this opinion, what would be the best points to raise? So this is an exercise I'm doing. It's going to be a pretty deep dive on that on the column. So I'll just tell you this. So I've been thinking, I don't blame at all Milan fans for pointing out that, you know, even on this podcast, we ripped them apart for losing Donnarumma and Çalhanoğlu, but especially Donnarumma for nothing, and that Juve should receive the same treatment for losing Dybala for nothing, which, as you said, Alex, yeah, to a lot of fans, it's like, oh, we can sign Dybala on a Bosman. Great. To me, though, it's a little bit different. And I had someone tweet me at this, and I think they explained it perfectly, that you can make a great case that Dybala was a sunk cost to Juve, that just extending him and paying him more, like they had reached the maximum benefit for him, and that investing more in him was not going to bring more returns. In some ways, it's similar to the thought process that Milan had when they let Pirlo go. Now, unlike Juve, Milan did make Pirlo an offer, but they knew it was an offer he was almost certainly going to turn down. It was a one-year deal, the famous story of the book with, in Pirlo's book about Galliani's pen. So to me, it's more similar to that. I thought Milan were like, you know what? Pirlo's best days are behind them. We're going to offer him, you know, contract. If he takes it, great. If he leaves, we're fine. We think he's done. So to me, it's much more similar to that. But to me, the best reason to keep Dybala isn't so much financial, but it is that tactical situation. Because you look at Dybala's career, his best moments was when he was playing next to Mandzukic, and not when Mandzukic was a winger, but when he was playing off him as a striker, and then with Higuain, they did form a good partnership there. And I do think, and we have seen glimpses of it, that you have Vlahovic and Dybala did have some nice moments, and we had that games where they assisted each other. It did look good. So to me, that is the one that you could talk me into. That would have been the best reason to keep him. But there is a but, and I do think Juve made the right decision here, and I've been bringing it along for a while, as I had questions on if Chiesa and Dybala were really compatible. I just don't think they are. I think it's really one or the other. I think Chiesa Vlahovic, that's a very, very strong duo for attackers next season. It's going to be hard for any other club to have a set of attackers that you trust as much as those two. Now, granted, there are health question marks with Chiesa, so there's that there, but there are certainly a lot of health question marks on Dybala. It's a little bit, and granted, they're higher caliber players, a little bit how in the 90s Juve decided to move on from Baggio because they had Del Piero. The last thought that I have on this is there is a little bit of the curse of the number 10 at Juve. Think about it. Ever since Andrea Agnelli famously told Del Piero, you have to need to leave the club, kicked him out the door. Think about it. It was vacant for a little while. We had Tevez for 2 years. Juve would have liked to keep him. He leaves. Dybala now is leaving on a Bosman. They're not going to get anything for him. And then there was another guy who had it briefly, and that was Pogba for one season. So, Alex, I do have to ask you real fast. Pogba has become the star of international breaks. The player that a lot of people talk about. It sounds like he's definitely not going to extend with Man United. Could you see him signing with another Premier League club that's not Man United?
I could. Yeah, I definitely could. Now, the next question is what team, because there's still only a handful of teams that I feel like Pogba would want to go to in the Premier League. Manchester City, I mean, that's such a big jump, right? And I don't know, is Pep and Pogba marriage that's likely to make sense? probably not. So then you think of Chelsea, and some have floated it around. Like, I wouldn't say Chelsea is completely unrealistic, but he's not still the profile they actually need in a DM. It does seem like if we do have owners in place and they are willing to back Tuchel, we're going to be trying for at least one of Declan Rice or Tchouaméni for Monaco. So Pogba would more be, wow, all right, we paid for a midfielder. And now, you know, I know Pogba's going to have high wages, but now we got Pogba thrown in the mix. And I don't know, David, I don't want to now bring it back to Jorginho, but I really do get the feeling that Jorginho, assuming we can have incomings and outgoings, Chelsea being this summer, I do have a feeling Jorginho could leave. So maybe Chelsea, still unlikely. Liverpool, I don't know. It doesn't really feel like a Klopp move, but who knows? They also are into smart business, aren't they? And getting a player with that talent technically on a free is sometimes considered smart business. Spurs, come on now. That's not happening. I mean, I know Antonio Conte's there as of right now, but that just doesn't seem likely. Arsenal, maybe. So this is the thing is, on a base, I answered your question saying, yeah, from a Pogba perspective, I don't think he's thinking like some other players would think, oh, Manchester United, I have to be loyal to them. I'm not going to go to another Premier League club. I don't think Pogba is thinking like that. And I'm not saying he's disloyal. I just don't get the sense that he has that type of a relationship with Manchester United. Whereas we know if someone like Eden Hazard came back to the Premier League, I'm almost certain it would only be Chelsea. And once again, I'm not saying Hazard is better or nicer or more loyal than Pogba, but the relationships between those clubs is just different. I know Pogba's been there twice, but I mean, David, he also has not been bashful to say like he's wasted his time there, you know? So it's just been so much more tumultuous and up and down. So I guess my answer to your question is I could see him staying in the Premier League some way, somehow. I'm just having trouble figuring out what team it would be with. So, yeah, I guess that's kind of what I'm saying on that. What about you?
You know, I could see him if in Serie A, I think it's really only Juve that has a chance. I mean, could Marotta? I just don't see it doing there. Look, I think not extending Dybala, does that make it a little bit more likely? Yeah, I mean, Juve obviously is not going to dedicate a huge salary slot to Dybala. So, look, it's kind of what I was saying earlier. You have Vlahovic, Chiesa. If you save the money on Dybala and you're losing it for nothing, but what you are saving is that huge annual salary that you are going to pay him, you know, turning around and trying to sign Pogba doesn't sound the craziest idea. We know he has strong ties to the club. So I wouldn't exclude it. Look, Juve has proved me totally wrong ever since they had ever since they pumped money from Exor into the club, they've been able to spend. So I wouldn't exclude it altogether. You know, I think Juve, especially now with that Dybala salary slot, is a little bit more realistic than that. So great opening segment, Alex. Always great to catch up with you. Now we're going to continue hearing on Dybala with our good friend Riccardo Spada. So I'm very excited to welcome the new guest because I feel like I found the unicorn. Not only is he a Juve fan that fans of other clubs tend to like, which is pretty rare, but he's also the rare Italian in Italy who really cares about the Nazionale and the Azzurri. So we're recording this before the game. My friend Riccardo Spada told me, make sure we record before we do the Italy game. So I'm actually wearing my lucky jersey for the interview. So I wanted to have Riccardo back on to talk about Dybala. We had him on a few months ago. It was a great chat. And, you know, I kind of wanted to hear his thoughts. So my good friend, it's always a pleasure to have you on. Bentornato to Calcioland.
Grazie, David. Thank you very much for inviting me. I was really missing Calcioland. So I'm happy to be back.
Awesome. So we're going to talk about Dybala. I will ask you at the end about Kulusevski as well. So last time you were on was right when Vlahovic arrived. And we talked a little bit about the impact of Vlahovic arriving, if that would change a little bit Juve's position with Dybala. So I think Arriva Bene was very clear, and he said it more than once, that once Vlahovic arrived, Dybala's situation changed. So in light of that, in light of Dybala's injuries, in light of everything that you feel about Dybala, do you think Juve made the right decision deciding not to extend his contract?
Yeah, it's a very difficult question, this one, because there are several aspects to be considered in the answer. No, on one side you have a tactical point of view, and from a tactical point of view, maybe I can share the decision, but also we are letting go a player which is a pure class. I mean, stunning player that can make a difference. But on the other side, on the tactical aspect, that Dybala is a striker that tends to play very far from the box and tends to overlap also with other players like Mezzale or Trequartisti that struggled to affirm at Juventus during the years also because of this. So what I'm saying is that Dybala is a player that forces a team to play a certain type of game, but at the same time he is not Leo Messi. So it's a price that after 7 years, maybe I think it's legitimate for a club to decide to change, because we have seen a lot from Paolo, but maybe my thought is that we might have seen everything that he can give, which is, I mean, it's still an important contribution to the team, but I'm not sure that we can see more. Then on top of that, there is of course the reality, which is the fact that Dybala this year missed 15 matches. Last season he missed 21 matches, and this is something that it must be taken into account when you build up a team, and in particular when you have also to take care of your expenses. So the decision from the team, I think it's legitimate. And apart from that, my personal feeling is that the way this story went, I think that something went wrong. The kind of message that has been given to Juventus without making even an offer to him in the end, it is a sign that probably someone didn't behave very well during the process. This is my feeling. I think that the club could have been fairly disappointed by his behavior, maybe. I'm sure that Dybala got an offer during the COVID times, which was a tough period, and we had a capital increase in that period.
Yeah.
And so if Juve is not used to go till so close to the expiry before to roll a contract. Okay. Generally, we roll it one or 2 years in advance. So the fact that we went that late, it was a clear sign that something went wrong during the negotiation. Then the club decided to go on Vlahovic. And I mean, it's a pity because I love the player, but somehow I understand the decision. And I also like the fact that Juve has taken this kind of tough behavior to players, which seems to pay out because if we look at AC Milan, it is what they are doing. They are leaving, they are letting players to go if they want to go, if they don't want to, if they ask too much. And Milan is reaching good results. So it seems that this kind of policy could pay.
Yeah, you know, I think one thing, you said a lot of smart things, but the one that stood out to me is I think even the biggest Dybala fan would have to concede odds are we've seen the best of Dybala already. And, you know, he's not that old, but I think that would be the consensus. So let's talk a little bit more about, because, you know, the reasons why it would have been better for Juve to keep him. So let's look at the opposite side. So you mentioned Milan, they've let players leave for free. And a lot of their fans, I think, rightfully have said, look, last summer, Milan was mocked by the press. And even I did, you know, losing Donnarumma and Calhanoglu for free is a tough blow. But I see Dybala maybe a little bit different than, say, Donnarumma. To me, it's a little bit more like when Pirlo left Milan. So when you look at what would be the worst for Juve, do you see it as losing a financial asset for nothing, more of like a sporting thing? Because you could argue that Dybala's best moments were with a striker like Vlahovic. I would say with Mandzukic and with Higuain, those were maybe his best times. So do you look at it more as a financial or a sporting loss if this becomes a regret for Juve?
Well, I think I look at it more as a sporting loss. The financial loss is clear because we're losing an asset that we could have sold for many millions. But from a sporting point of view, definitely, I think that the reason one to keep him, it's not to give him to our competitors, because what I've said before is that, as you notice, is that we might have seen the best of Dybala, but the best of Dybala at Juventus, not the best of Dybala in absolute terms. So I have to say that I'm scared to see him exploding somewhere else, because, as you said, he's not old. And then from a sporting point of view, another reason is that he's a player that can change a match, and we don't have a lot of players like him at the moment, but I don't see many other reasons. There's one reason more that I will touch, and apologize because you say that we're going to talk about Kulusevski later, but I have to say that if I look it in that perspective, I think that in the same year, to let go both Dybala and Kulusevski, to me, doesn't make a lot of sense. Because now that we are letting Dybala go, I really don't understand why we have sold Kulusevski. Because in perspective, if you let Dybala go probably and you have Kulusevski, you know that you want to renew Dybala, then you should keep Kulusevski, because 2022 to 2023 could be his season, definitely. DK10 could have been a project. So
I love it. So you're speaking my language.
This is my biggest concern.
Okay, no, I like it. I like it. Okay, so let's look. We're going to look to the future in a second, because I want to ask you where you'd like or where you wouldn't like to see Dybala. But when you look back at his time at Juve, and maybe he'll have another big moment before he leaves, what are some of your favorite memories of Dybala at Juve?
Well, I was really big fan of the guy. Yeah, so now it looks like I'm a bit... rational, but I was really mad for the guy since he arrived at the club from Zamparini's Palermo. It's a pure class player. So I have no regret to admit that I was among those thought that he could have been the new Messi at the very beginning. So, well, the memories, it's easy. I mean, the favorite one, I think it's not going to be far from yours, is the match Juve-Barcelona when Dybala scores a double. Another one was the goal to Inter during the hard COVID times in an empty stadium. And that goal was really amazing. And also, I remember also a goal to Lazio, which was key for the Scudetto.
Yeah, that Lazio one is definitely a great shout. Okay, so let me ask you this, because I mentioned it earlier that I think Dybala leaving Juve is not so much like Donnarumma. To me, it's more like Pirlo. Milan thought, okay, this is the best days are behind them. We can let him go. At the time, maybe that made sense. And Pirlo is a little bit older. So, A, where do you think, if you were advising Dybala, which club do you think he should go to? And let's say, hypothetically, he goes to Inter. How terrified would you be should that happen?
So I answered to the first part of your question first. I think that there is a perfect fit for Dybala in Italy, which is not Inter, but which is AC Milan. AC Milan plays 4-2-3-1, and it would be just perfect in place of Messias or Brahim Diaz. So that would be, tactically speaking, my perfect fit for him. And then if I look at his face, the guy will go to Barcelona. Is the typical face of Barcelona, yeah. Eternal young Dorian Gray player that never gets old, no beard, no mustache, nothing. I don't know. Probably I would say he might go to Barcelona, but my perfect fit for him is AC Milan.
What if you were to go to Inter? How scared would you be of that?
I'd be scared a lot, and I will be also a bit pissed off, of course. But now we have afforded Antonio Conte to Inter. We have afforded Arturo Vidal to Inter, which is even worse. So I think I can afford also Dybala to Inter. I'm ready now. They're buying all our players, so nothing.
Yeah. I do remember last time you were on, you mentioned how much you loved Vidal, and I think that was a great shout. I mean, Vidal at Juve was really, really something. I know maybe to people that forgot or maybe didn't follow that much, maybe it sounds a little crazy to say Vidal over Conte, but I see where you're coming from. So I want to ask you, I'm going to close it on Juve, but I want to ask you about Kulusevski, because you and I share a passion for him. So he goes to Spurs. He's been doing very well. He's had some interviews where, you know, he took some Sassolini fuori dalle scarpe. He took out some little rocks out of the shoes with Juve. Did say that he felt very supported and happy at Spurs. So, A, are you surprised that Kulusevski is doing this well at Spurs? And do you think this says something about how Juve handles young players in general?
No, I'm not surprised. It's not a matter of Spurs, but it's the manager of the Spurs that is one of the best in the panorama, and Antonio Conte knows how to extract the most out of talented players, and also how to extract the most and motivate young players, because we can see what he did with Barella at Inter, but also with a lot of players at Juventus at the very beginning of his experience. Conte is a coach that tells you exactly what do you have to do to grow, what do you have to do on the pitch, what is your position, that has a clear tactical idea in mind. So it's not a philosophy like Allegri's one that is, first of all, do not concede and then we will see what happens. So it's the Antonio Conte's play is something that is much more studied, in my opinion, and much more clear. And it's normal that a player like Kulusevski would desperately need to be to have a clear message. Now is finally delivering, as he has always delivered in his career. Because if we look back, Kulusevski delivered at Parma, Kulusevski delivered when he was young at Atalanta Primavera. So the only surprise was the underperformance at Juventus. So the question is not about Spurs, but is about us. because it's not the first player that we buy and is underperforming, because we made the same also with Bernardeschi. I mean, I hate him, you know, but this guy was I really hate him, but this guy was good at Fiorentina. Well, he was probably one of the most talented guys in town and in the country. And then he evolved in nothing. I cannot exclude that if he leaves Juventus, which is something that I hope every day, he will start delivering again.
Fair.
So it's a question that we have to ask to ourselves.
Fair. Okay, let's try to be a little more optimistic on Lubitsch. So let me ask you this. I think... you know, I had questions if Dybala and Chiesa were ever really fully compatible. So I think people are kind of forgetting like how good Chiesa was, you know, at the Euro and even at Juve. So are you pretty comfortable next season, Vlahovic, Chiesa being the main strikers? I'm sure there'll be someone else, probably Morata, probably Moise Kean. But let's say Vlahovic and Chiesa are the main guys. Would you be satisfied as them being the main attack for Juve?
No, I think that Juve must sign another striker, another attacker, because honestly, I don't think that the future of Morata, the perspective for Morata changed. I think that Morata won't be confirmed at Juventus. So, in my opinion, we'll enter in the summer with Vlahovic, Chiesa coming from a big injury, and Moise Kean, which is not convincing. So, I'm pretty sure that Juventus should sign and will sign a striker, since generally it's a Sassuolo's player. Probably is going to be, if we talk about replacing Dybala, it might be Raspadori. But if you ask to Riccardo Spada, I would buy Berardi, definitely.
Ah, I like it. Okay, so let me ask you this. Juve would have to win every game and need, you know, the other teams to falter. So I'm not sure how realistic that is. But in your opinion, if you had to guess today, who is going to win this Scudetto?
In my opinion, AC Milan. And I'm saying this since quite a long time. I think is a team that is definitely playing the best football, but not this season, since one solar year. They play beautiful football when they play vertical, when they run. And they are a good team because they suffered. It's a team that passed an entire cycle of trouble. So I think that they are really ready to win. I'm not surprised about Inter period, because I always said that at the very beginning, Inter was on the long wave of Antonio Conte, but every team has to face a difficult moment. And in that difficult moment, then you have to see the real contribute of Simone Inzaghi. And then suddenly everybody discovered that Simone Inzaghi is not Antonio Conte. Wow! So I don't think Juventus is a contender. So my view on Juventus for this season is totally unchanged. Even if we got some good results in the league, we won some games. We are unbeaten since, 14, 15, I don't know how many games we are unbeaten. But the level of play is still the same, which means that games like Villarreal can happen every Sunday and will happen. So we are not that kind of team that can win all the games from now till the end and win the Scudetto. I don't think so. Moreover, we are not second. We are fourth. So one thing is being second at -7. You can win the Scudetto. Being fourth at -7, you cannot win the Scudetto, because you have to catch not one team, but three teams. So it's impossible that all the teams collapse.
I totally, I totally agree with you. Okay, let's close with the most important question. So not only are you a Juve fan that other fan bases stomach, you are an Italian in Italy who follows and loves the Azzurri, but you are an expert on watches. So I want to ask you this. I think we did a great job covering Dybala in a pretty fair way. But if Dybala were a luxury watch, tell us which brand and model would he be and why?
So I answer you with one sentence. You never actually own a Patek Philippe. You merely look after it for the next generation. So this is, I think, a great description of Paolo Dybala, in particular in this moment because we are letting him go. So it's something that you really never own, but you have it in custody for some time. So I think he's a Patek Philippe, and since he's pure class, I would say he's a Calatrava, which is one of the most iconic classic watch by Patek Philippe.
Fantastic. So you guys can't say that we trash Dybala on this podcast. So Riccardo, you've done a fantastic job both times you've been on. I think you've been a really, really excellent guest. So enjoy the Azzurri game, and I look forward to chatting with Calcio with you again in the near future. Thanks so much for your appearance.
Thank you very much, David, and thank you all. Hope to come back soon. Bye-bye.
Okay, always great to hear from Riccardo. We did record that before the Italy game. I know he's one of the rare people in Italy who's really bummed out about the national team being out. Before we get to Alessandro Iagobone to talk a little bit about Milan, we're going to do a special part of the show for patrons. If you enjoy our Friday show, consider subscribing on Patreon. We have an episode every Tuesday just for patrons. We answer all their questions. We also have tiers with articles. We had a great one from Enrico Passarella and Frank Risorto last week. I'm going to write about Dybala today and write about the Italian national team over the weekend. It's a great community. So if you enjoy Calcio, consider becoming a patron. I'm so excited to welcome our next guest. I've been talking about Milan with our good friend Alessandro Iagobone for many years, dating back to a special episode we had done on the Milan sale before Elliot took over. So we go way, way back with Alessandro. And I was telling him before we started recording that this has been the best period for Milan since we've chatted. So I'm very excited to hear his thoughts. For those of you not familiar with Alessandro's work, he has the excellent Non Evoluto Twitter account, which is also an outstanding YouTube channel if you want to stay up to date with Milan. Both analysis of the season, transfers, big picture. Ale does a fantastic job. He's an old school Calcio fan like me. He actually started supporting Milan back in the early 80s when they were in Serie B. He is the co-founder of the excellent Radio Rossonera in Italy. You can see him on TV dello Sport. And again, also featured on Replay from Milan News. So Ale, it's always a real pleasure to chat Calcio with you. Bentornato to Calcio Land.
Thank you, David. All the time that you do that presentation of me, like, you make me feel important. And you're a good promoter. Thank you very much for your words. You know that I exchange all the love you have friends see so far. But I seriously appreciate what you do on your podcast. So I'm very proud to be here again and to talk to you and to your listeners.
Absolutely. Well, listen, you know, I only bring on people that I'd want to listen to. That's kind of always my rule. I try to make a podcast that I'd want to listen to, and you're definitely someone that I want from Milan. So let's start here. I've been asking this to our guests that cover a team. We are heading into the final stretch of the season. If you had to pick one word to describe Milan's season so far, what would it be and why?
Proud. I'm very proud. Proud of what they do, proud of the way that they do, proud for the management behaving, the ownership behaving, following the rules. respecting the other teams, not complaining too much in front of the media, even if some of the supporter invite Maldini and Massara and Gazzidis to talk more when there is something that is happening against our club. But at the end, looking from outside, like one step back, like I appreciate all of this. This is a new curse that could seriously help us, like, to come back where we deserve to stay in the right way with the new rules, because it's not the same soccer of the 80s. And so we needed to forget what we saw and what we were fan of. And I'm talking to you that I are a boomer as much as I am. So you know what I mean. And with this new culture 2.0 is like the best way to manage the team, as Elliot and Gazzidis and Maldini and Massara are doing. So proudness is like, I'm very proud of what they do. And that's the best feeling that I could feel.
You know, I think that's an excellent choice because, you know, a lot has been made about the way Milan has cut costs, about them drawing a line in the sand on what they will do with agent commissions and whatnot. So I think that's a great way to look at it, that you're very proud that they've achieved success while going about it in a sustainable, and I would go say fair and right way of doing things. And yeah, Milan has also faced a ton of adversity. So I think proud's a really great word to use there. So Ale, you are great with the mercato. I want to talk to you more though about the team on the pitch. But you know, a lot was made in the January window after Kier's injury and then Tomori got hurt, that Milan didn't make any moves bringing in a center back. But we've had the emergence of Kalulu, who's been really fantastic. And I think, you know, you look at the types of signings that Gazzidis and Maldini wanted to do, I think he fits that perfectly. And I find his partnership with Tomori really, really fantastic. So you're old school like me. You've seen a ton of great defenders at Milan. What do you like about this particular duo, Tomori-Kalulu, right now?
The happiness when they play. Like, I mean, looks like they match like seriously together. Like they are so coordinated when they move and when they follow the Pioli's suggestion and the request about the movement of defending back. So like you see that they do, like, they are very focused on what they do, and that's the characteristic that put in common the two players. And the sprint, the coordination when someone is pressing the other players, the other one is ready to run back, like in just in case, you know, the forward like is dangerous, like getting close to the door. So they are like, yeah. For example, an example is like the way that they played against Osimhen. That, yeah, is like someone that is good for the with the dribbling, but in the meantime, if you miss to stop him at the first step, you need to be fast, seriously fast, to don't let him like go away. And that is the kind of approach that they had: one ready to press him, and the other one ready to run after him, like anticipating his ideas. That's something that is not easy to find in a couple of defenders, the center back defender. So I seriously appreciate this kind of modern, and we always say modern football, modern way to play. Like, this is the modern, you know, approach. Yeah. It's an European approach of defending, not Italian stereotype type, but European, and that's our target, to arrive and to restart to dominate in Europe. So this base is important. It's the first step to create a team ready to be competitive in Italy, but with the mentality of European football that is much more important.
For sure. So I want to ask you about two players that have stood out to me. I think Leao has had really a breakout season. I think he's as talented as really any player in Serie A, feels he can roll out of bed and have a great game. And then there's Theo Hernandez, who of course has been excellent for Milan for a while, but I have to say, I think he's picked it up a notch, especially in 2022. I think that game against Napoli maybe has been the best game I've seen him have at Milan too, also defensively. So who has surprised you more, Leao throughout the season or Theo going up a notch in this part of 2022?
I say Leao just because I have to apologize to him, and as I did on my channel, as I did on TV, as I did on the radio, on my social, I was ready to sell him and hoping to find the right left forward, because I thought he was, of course, talented, like, of course, because you should be blind to don't see the quality. But I thought that was more close to be a good rapper than a good footballer, you know? So that's my mistake. And I'm so glad to say that I was wrong. So I choose him because he needs a prize from me, even if he doesn't know even who I am. But anyway, like, he deserves like my support since now, because he surprised me a lot, and not just me. And even if sometimes he has like some small breakout, he can grow up a lot, he can get better, he can improve, he can be probably the only one top player, real top player that we have, but is someone that can give to the people, to the fans, the happiness to watch soccer like Ronaldinho was doing, you know, like the pleasure to see something that has put the quality and also the result on what you do on the field.
Very well said. Very well said. Before I ask you a couple of questions on the mercato, obviously Milan's going down the stretch for the Scudetto. I know you're Scaramantico, so I'm not going to ask you if you think Milan are going to win, but I'm going to ask you, which of the teams in contention scares you the most?
Bro, I answer to your question because I've been... I'm not saying the one, the only one, but I've been one of the first to get even angry when we were losing and wasting points, having the wrong approach to the match with a small team, with a little team. And because I always thought that we don't need, we don't must to win, but we must to try to win. I mean, that's different. I mean, Milan has to try, and I always said that. So it's not surprising me that we are in the first position. It surprised me that we don't have more points from our position and the second one. And but most of the time is because we wasted. Okay, of course, we got damaged from the referees as well. Yeah. At least 4 or 6 points, but there are so many points that we left on the street on the way, just because we were not focusing to be able to win. And I was focused before the team, and believe me that you know that I have a connection with a club. I always tried to say, come on, let's try. But our target is the Champions League qualification. Let's try. Because I knew, considering that Simone Inzaghi team, also when he was in Lazio, as like the slowing down in the end of the season, I said, if he's doing the same thing, if Inter is getting stressed because of our pressure, they're going to mess all the points that they put in advance. So I said, be ready, Milan. Be ready to be on the Inter's back because they're going to fall. They're going to fall. They're going to fall. So I'm very proud of myself about this suggestion, about this pressure that they put on the Mondo Milan, because believe me, I'm not surprised at all, because we are one of the team that is playing the best football in the last 2 years. After the pandemic, we are one of the best club to give like a nice and peaceful way to play. And that's important. So I think that we have just to watch to ourselves. I'm not scared about Napoli. I'm not scared about Inter. I'm scared about ourselves. We need to trust 100% to be focused, and interrogative point of the referees, because this is like a variability that we cannot control. But anyway, it's better to be focused to ourselves and to, you know, approach to the Bologna, approach to the next games with the same intensity of Milan-Napoli, Milan-Inter, Milan-Juventus.
Very well said. Very well said, Alex. So I'm just going to ask you one question on the mercato, because again, right now, Milan fans should be focused on the season. That's what it's all about. But I do want to ask you about Botman and Renato Sanchez. And the reason I want to ask you is you've been way ahead on this. Dating back to last November, you did, talk about the potential of Milan signing both players, and it's become something discussed more, especially with Kessié heading to Barcelona. So tell us a little bit about this. Do you think there is a chance that Milan can sign both these players?
Well, Botman, when I heard the first time his name and I started to get informed, like, I understood that was the priority for AC Milan, even if when colleagues that they were asking to the managers and to Massara about the interest, they were like try to avoiding the question and blah blah blah. But I knew and I was quite sure that was the priority, because they consider like the perfect partner of Tomori, but anyway, in the same time of Kalulu or other option that can play all together and be three defenders and change the way to play. Even if this season we saw so many times AC Milan defending when it was like creating the attack, like they were defending with three in the back. So anyway, there are like so many solutions, but I think that the smart players as Botman is are always good to fit perfectly in a defender line of AC Milan. About Sanchez, when I figured out that Kessié was going to finish in the way that we know, signing with another team, in this case Barcelona, and leaving 2-0 like AC Milan, I knew that Maldini and Massara wanted like to put a name, not because you needed to buy like a big name to surprise the fans, the supporters, even because I think that it's been clear to all that they don't follow this kind of strategy. They don't want to shock with a big name. Kalulu is an example, you know. They know what to buy. But the personality to be ready to play the Champions League, and since the next year we will be in Champions League again, to be ready to be protagonist, to make the difference, because Kessié, we cannot say that now, come on, we don't care that he's leaving. Kessié is a big, huge column of this Milan. So his leaving is not like, you cannot like consider like whatever Borini leaving or what is something important. So you need to put another one that is not too young to need the time to grow up, but ready to play and to dominate the center of the field, where all the trainers say, all the Mr. say, like the team create create all the, you know, the soul of the team. So that's what I hear. And I started to get information from the manager and blah 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 and everything, pushing about this, and of course asking around to people that is around the Sanchez entourage, and I got just confirmation that the idea is to take Botman for 25 millions and Sanchez for around 18-20 million maximum, and do the package with Lille, that, you know, as you know, has a good relationship with AC Milan since Elliot loaned the money to the ownership of Lille, and there is a great connection, and Magnan has been like an example of it.
Fantastic. Ale, I can't thank you enough for doing this. As I mentioned, we go way back. I'm very excited that we're here to chat in such a great moment for Milan. So I want to reiterate, if you're looking for really good, top-notch coverage of Milan, not just clickbait, really good analysis, solid transfer news, Ale was way ahead when Piontek joined Milan, and he's had great reporting. So always check out his work. So Ale, thanks so much for doing this. I look forward to talking to you again very soon, my friend.
Thanks for the invitation again. It's been a pleasure, always a pleasure. I hope to see you again in Milan to argue and to go to watch a game with you, because could be cool, first of all, to see you. And second, to put all our back this period of pandemic, now there is a war, whatever, I want to see friends and go to the stadium and watch football with one of the person that is seriously like in my heart in this business.
So well, that means so much to me, Ale. You know, you're a great guy, and that's why I like working with you. So I will take you up on that, my friend. So thanks so much for doing it, and we'll chat again very soon. Okay, always great to hear from my friend Alessandro Iacobone in Milano. Next time I'm down, we are definitely going to meet in person. So before we wrap up the pod, I want to close talking a little bit about the Oscars, but also because I think it kind of ties into something we are seeing in society a lot. I think it's become more and more in society about a binary option between two things, and as extremely different as possible. It seems like in society, we are going more and more towards this. We've talked a lot on the podcast about tribalism, bullying, and the media and how it works. The media in general really works on outrage. They know that people being outraged keeps people engaged. Putting people in camps and making people resent the other camp brings huge, huge engagement. It's doing massive damage to society. I've been rewatching The Wire. One thing that has really stood out to me about this rewatch is in the season where Bunny Colvin essentially legalizes drugs to try to resolve the problems there. Sometimes there are unintended consequences when you try to make a big change. And the unintended consequences in that is that he moved all the drug trade into a neighborhood, and all the people that used to work around it, the lookout for the drug dealers, the police is coming, all those people found themselves unemployed. So a lot of times there are certain things that happen that you didn't plan for that happen because of a development that you made. And I think our society becoming so binary and so extreme is having massive problems. And it's amazing how this is even transpiring into the Oscars. And I know nowadays the Oscars aren't nearly as important as they've been in the past. When we started this podcast, when the Oscars were coming, it was a big deal. People actually cared a lot more. We used to bring in Andrew Barker. We did a big to do about it. And I'm a huge movie fan. Like, I probably like movies more than I like sports, and I'm not as excited as I am. But even with the Oscars, it has come down to two binary, completely extreme choices. Going into
you know, the awards, it sounds like it's going to come down between The Power of the Dog and Coda. And those two movies couldn't be more opposite. Power of the Dog, for lack of a better word, is an incredibly pretentious movie, like with great cinematography, a dense plot, great acting. I got to be honest, the first time I watched it, I didn't fully get it. I had to read an explanation, and then I rewatched it and I got really into it. I wouldn't fault anyone for describing me as pretentious with some aspects of my life. So when it comes into movies, yeah, I can totally get that way. And Power of the Dog is exactly that type of movie, the type of movie that we're like, that the Oscars get criticized for recognizing, saying, well, normal people don't give a crap about this sort of movie. On the entire opposite side of the spectrum, we have Coda. And I even feel bad speaking badly of this movie. Like, even some of my tweets on Coda were like featured in this article on film bros hating on this movie. I've never been described as a film bro. I don't know if I enjoyed it or not, but it kind of made me laugh. And look, Coda to me is a very nice movie. It makes people happy. I really like it. It's a heartwarming story, but it's a glorified made for TV movie. You know, it's like the basic cinematography that you see on like streaming service movies. It's not an incredibly well made movie. So we've made it into a binary option, the most extreme options. Is there something in between Power of the Dog, like a pretentious movie that very few people can appreciate, and a crowd pleaser that a lot of people enjoy? Yeah, there absolutely are this year. You have King Richard, which is a fantastic, heartwarming movie that's shot incredibly well. It has a great cast, that has a real movie star in Will Smith. Like, maybe recognizing that would be awesome. We have Licorice Pizza, who's made by a great director, P.T. Anderson, with great first-time actors. It feels and looks like a Hollywood movie. So it's become a totally binary option. Even with this. So don't hate me too much if I am not too thrilled with Coda. Look, I know a lot of people love Green Book, and I thought Green Book at least was a Hollywood movie. It wouldn't have been my choice that year, but it felt like a real movie there. So I'm excited for the Oscars. I do want to thank everyone that tuned into the show. We really do appreciate the support. If you like what you heard, consider becoming a patron. Please leave us a review on iTunes. Leave us 5 stars there. Leave a comment. I read them all. Please follow us on Spotify. Leave us 5 stars there. I know you guys have a ton of options with Calcio Podcast. So thank you so much for tuning in, and talk to you next week.